Welcome to Pet Food Advisors. I'm Tracy Hotchner, a pet wellness advocate with a special interest in dog and cat nutrition. I wrote the Dog Bible and the Cat Bible, but I'm still learning every day about what goes into a good, healthy diet for our pets. I'm here with pet food experts to help unravel the mysteries of pet diets so you can make thoughtful decisions about feeding your own cats and dogs. If you want to stay in the know when it comes to doing what's best for your pets, follow me on Facebook and Twitter. You'll find me at Tracy Hotchner. That's Tracy with an I-E. Have a pet-related question or comment? Post it on my page or tweet me. Pet Food Advisors is a production of Pet Media, Inc., with opinions and information that are the sole responsibility of the expert guests who offer them. I also produce the philanthropic New York Dog Film Festival, sponsored by the Petco Foundation, which I take around the country, celebrating the love between dogs and their people while benefiting the animal welfare groups that bring them together. Get more information at dogfilmfestival.com and the new catfilmfestival.com. This show is brought to you in part with the generous support of Precious Cat Litter, owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian who has created a variety of low-dust litters for the health of all members of the family, so everyone can breathe easier. Precious Cat has a litter for the special needs of kittens, for senior cats, for long-haired, and for those with out-of-litter box problems, who can get back in the box with Cat-Attract litter. Precious Cat's Touch of the Outdoors is a litter made with field grasses grown in their own fields, bringing the natural scent of the outdoors to provide environmental enrichment for indoor cats. Precious Cat's newest health monitor litter has broken new ground by allowing people to find the early signs of kidney disease in their kitties and intervene before damage is done, prolonging the quality and length of their kitty cat's lives. I am back with Ryan Yamka, who, as I said, is a nutritional consultant, veterinary consultant, and he's worked for Hill's Pet Nutrition, the Hartz Mountain Company, Blue Buffalo. He's done a lot of consulting with pet food companies, and he also co-authored the macronutrient section in the book they use in vet school to study nutrition. So that's pretty cool. Ryan, welcome to the show, and I'm so glad you got in touch after I recently wrote a blog about crude protein that seems to just fascinate people. The words crude protein, no one seems to quite know what they are. So I really appreciate what you do. So your work is as a researcher, or do you look at all the research that's been done and then pull together that information, either as a consultant or as an author?
So when that book chapter was written, I was actually employed at Hill's Pet Nutrition.
Okay.
And it was compiled from a lot of research that was out there that was conducted by myself when I was at University of Kentucky, as well as research by George Fahey and his group at a University of Illinois, as well as other universities that would have been publishing things. So that whole chapter really at that point in time was a summary of all of the peer-reviewed data that would have been, as part of that topic.
And that sort of research and then the compiling of it is how pet food companies and the AAFCO, I'm thinking, come up with the proportions and the amounts of various nutrients that go into pet food so that it is well balanced and covers all the bases of what a dog or a cat needs, and I'm sure other animals as well, but in our case we're talking about dogs and cats, needs to stay healthy. Is that right? It's studying the minimums and maximums?
Well, I would consider it more of they have developed the guidelines, their recommended guidelines for to get an animal to thrive. If you actually went to the nutrient requirement book for dogs and cats, you'll see that a lot of those numbers are either lower or higher. So when AFCO puts those things together, they want to make sure that you're well above the threshold for minimum requirements and you're well below the threshold for what would be a toxic situation. So they're not going to put a maximum that is at a toxic level because, you know, variation in ingredients and things of that nature, you don't want to be running that red line, so to speak, like you would on a car. So what they do is they put out guidelines to make sure that you're not going to have any issues with that food, to ensure the animal is going to thrive and have a healthy life.
And thrive is a very important word, because survive is actually part of what I thought were in the minimums, that it was what it would take to maintain life over a 6-month period, not what would have an animal really thrive. But I guess that pet nutrition, commercial pet nutrition, has evolved to some extent beyond survival or maintenance of life to actually thriving and having, you know, healthy skin and fur and eyes and heart. Is that right? Has it evolved, or did I just misunderstand the survive versus thrive kind of mantra?
No, it's in some aspects it has evolved, and in other aspects it may not have. And so, for example, now you're going to see requirements for things like DHA and stuff like that to ensure proper puppy development and things of that nature. And when you look at the guidelines, depending on if you're in the U.S. or the EU or whatever, they may have different reasons for doing it. So when AFCO puts together their information, they're trying to take into account everyday ingredients that they're utilizing, as well as digestibility of the total foods. So that's why you won't see them recommend, hey, you know, the minimum requirement for dogs is, let's say, for argument's sake, 10% protein. They'll come in and say it's 18. So you're ensuring that that animal is going to be in good shape. If you were to go to Europe, their numbers, some of their numbers, especially for mineral, actually has nothing to do with the health of the animal. Has more of an issue of environmental impact. And,
really?
Yeah. And so, for example, zinc is a great example. They have a very low number for dogs and cats there, and it's tied to the environment, which was, you know, if the animal defecates zinc, you have runoff into watersheds and things of that nature. And so when you get into different countries, they may have upper limits for different reasons. It's not always for the animal's health, not to say that in that case that animal's unhealthy, but it's for environment reasons.
How interesting. And I've lived in Italy for a long time and bought commercial dog food there for my dogs and kitties, as well as giving them human food. And I thought, oh, it looks so great, and the Italians are so very, very fiercely against using any fake colors or artificial chemicals in any of their food, human or animal. And along with the kibble shapes, there was cracked corn that had been smashed. I don't know what the process is, but they looked like corn flakes. They were flakes of real corn, like you'd give cracked corn to a chicken or to a horse or a cow, but it was smashed for the dog. And I thought, well, this is really great. And then met a man whose family was wildly wealthy because they had the biggest animal feed company in Italy for pigs and sheep and those kind of animals. And I said something about, oh, the food is so much better here for dogs and cats and so much cleaner and healthier. And how do they, you know, who determines all of these important regulations? He said, nobody. There's no regulation at all. Now, I don't know if that's changed. This was about 12 years ago. But unlike the whole idea of AFCO and now the FDA being involved in pet food, there were no minimums or maximums for the health of animals. You could put pretty much anything into dog and cat food in Italy, which surprised me because it looked and smelled really good. So isn't that a bit odd?
I'm surprised he would have said that, because they would have to follow the FEDIAF guidelines. FEDIAF is the acronym.
I see
what it stands for, but they just might have not been aware of it. To say that they don't have to follow anything, I would say is not accurate.
I you know what? Being a company that big, he had to be aware of it. I guess he was just being that sort of Italian anarchistic attitude, which is no one's going to tell me what to do, because that's so Italian. I mean, each of them is a personal anarchist. Well, this is interesting about the protein issue, crude protein being one of those kind of head scratchers for consumers. At least it was for me when I was researching way back when, and even continuing to pay attention to it, because people for their own diets and for their pets' diets know that protein is the most expensive part of our diets, and one in which high protein is what wealthier people and luckier animals can have, right? That it's better to have more protein. But crude protein doesn't really mean protein. It doesn't mean 18% actual chicken, right? Can you talk about crude protein and what that number, what it really means, what that value really means?
Sure. So to begin with, human industry and pet industry use the same measurement. And so they're both using either a Kaldol method, which is a long drawn out process of measuring nitrogen content in the food, or the Dumas method, which is a combustion method, and it's a lot faster. Both methods, what they do is they measure the nitrogen content of the food, and then they use a factor of 6.25 to estimate protein. And being that it is a crude method, hence the name crude protein.
I see.
For a human nutrition, for whatever reason, they never added crude to it. For pet food, they did, because, you know, back in the day you had scientists doing it and they were analyzing it, and that's what they're doing. And they're actually in the process now, AFCO and the FDA, of discussing should they drop the terms crude from protein, fat, and fiber, because they're using similar methods and they want to make something similar to a nutrition facts box. It won't be called that, but it'll be something that's similar in lines to what humans see, so they can understand that better.
And it looks better. The word crude protein, something about it, I used to think it was like, oh, men in the forest eating crude protein, like the raw protein, but it didn't mean that at all. It meant a measurement of the nitrogen. Is it that the protein breaks down as, or gives off as what does that mean? The nitrogen is how you judge the protein.
Right. So what it's doing is protein is made of amino acids, and amino acids all have nitrogen in them. They're nitrogen-containing compounds. There's other compounds that contain nitrogen as well, and that's why, you know, that method's called crude protein.
Okay.
But in that case, what they're trying to do is give you a best estimate of how much protein and how much amino acids are in that food. For that animal. And more importantly, they also utilize that number along with crude fat and carbohydrate to determine the energy content of the food using Atwater. The problem with just looking with crude protein as a number on the paper or on the bag or
right,
wherever you're looking it up and comparing it, is you could be looking at five different foods that all say 30% crude protein, and their marketing people can be saying all these great things.
Right.
But if they don't have numbers for, let's say, amino acid content of the food, or actual digestibility or absorption numbers,
yes,
those numbers of 30% crude protein really doesn't tell you anything, because it doesn't tell you about the quality of, and availability of that protein source.
Exactly.
And things that people tend to forget about is, and this is why pet food companies, they will over formulate foods, because some of those proteins get either degraded or damaged through cooking processes, whether
right,
it's canned food or
right,
dry food.
Yep.
And it's no different than what you see, and the best way to describe it, the Maillard reaction, is those that, you know, watch a sugar cookie kind of browns and it gets that browning effect.
Yes.
Well, sometimes individual amino acids like lysine, for example, can bind to a sugar, making that nutrient not available. Now, I would still go and analyze that food, and I would still pick up that crude protein because that nitrogen is still in that food. But that lysine that might have undergone that reaction in that pet food would not be digested or absorbed
right,
by the animal. And so you don't know those numbers. For you to have a better feeling of it, the supplier or whoever manufactures the food, they should supply digestibility numbers to go with it. Most companies that are science-based and they have nutritionists on staff will have that number or that knowledge, and most of the time they're more than happy to share it with you. Some will even put it on their websites or in their product guides, and veterinarians usually have access to that information. If they don't know how to get it, they can usually track it down.
That's really interesting. I mean, it really makes the attempt to get a high protein in a pet food and paying super premium for it, it changes the picture when you know that it's the digestibility of it. How much of that protein is available to the dog or cat's body to actually absorb and digest as protein? And just asking for the digestibility number sounds like a really a good solution, especially you're paying money every week or every month, and you want to make sure you're spending it well for ultimate health, right?
Absolutely. And so, you know, to put it in context, and, you know, it's crude numbers, but if I was looking at two different foods and they're both 30% crude protein and one of them was 100% digestible, doesn't mean it's all absorbable, but let's just assume it is. And the other one is 50%. Well, that one that's 50% would be no different than feeding something that was 15%.
Exactly.
That was 100% digestible and absorbed.
Exactly.
And so having those numbers become very important and relevant to the consumer, because, you know, not all proteins are created equal.
Exactly what I've thought for years. I really appreciate you explaining it, Ryan. We're out of time, but it's great to have such a pro explain these things so well and so clearly. Gonna have to have you come back. There's so many other ingredients that I would love to discuss. Animal fat being one of them, as opposed to fat from an actual animal. It's been great talking to you, and I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Great. I had a great time, and look forward to coming back.
Absolutely. You take care.
Thank you. You too.
This show has also been supported by Best Pet RX, a unique compounding pharmacy for pets in New York City. They can turn any medication for dogs and cats into a custom-flavored, oral-paste, chewable tablet or a liquid that your pet will actually like. And Best Pet RX will keep trying formulations at no extra charge and offers same-day delivery in New York City and overnight delivery anywhere else, so that your pet can happily take the medication she needs to get well and stay well. Support for this show also comes from VaxaCheck, a simple test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog or puppy is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. If you're concerned about over-vaccinating your pet, whether young or old, VaxaCheck can help you and your veterinarian make the best decision about vaccinating in your individual situation. Shelters can use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones and avoid unnecessarily over-vaccinating dogs. VaxaCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind.